I mean, it's really meant for the lay person to come and experience all the many ways that the microbiome impacts you.
That's great. And if people want to attend this conference, you can find complete details at Cerimone, C-E-R-I-M-O-N, house.org/gutinstinct. And if you would like to attend the conference, they've offered KBOO listeners a special 25% off any ticket with the discount code KBOO. And Dr. Vickers, I know you have a very busy practice that is essentially closed.
Yes.
But you have a clinic, and mm-hmm. people can, if they want to find out more or come to your clinic, that they would find you at?
onhowclinic.org, A-N-H-A-O clinic.org.
Well, Dr. Edie Vickers, thank you so much for being with us today on Health Watch.
Thanks for inviting me.
And thank you. You can listen to Health Watch on kboo.org/healthwatch. Tune in again next month on the second Monday of the month to listen to me again. And thank you very much. This is Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host.
Listening to KBOO. Up next is Radio Zine.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This film this month, Incarcerating Us, will play Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. With 2.3 million people behind bars, the U.S. has the largest prison population in the history of the world. Incarcerating Us tells the story of America's broken criminal justice system through the eyes of those who created it, those who have suffered through it, and those who are fighting to change it. Again, that's Incarcerating Us, Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, everyone. It's 11:32 right now at KBOO FM 90.7. I'm Dan Johnson, and my guest today is Vinny Kinsella, who has just now come out with a new book called Fashionably Late. And we're going to get into that book in just a minute or so here. But just a little bit about Vinny, if you don't mind, and that is that when Vinny was 34 years old, and you can take this as a compliment, I actually, the way you look, I thought you were still working on 22. So 34 years old, he decided it was time for him to come out. But this writer, publisher, and entrepreneur had more in mind. Vinny also established the Late Bloomers Club here in Portland, Oregon, which then led him to put this anthology together. And Vinny joins us today. Vinny, thank you very much for being here. And before I forget, happy Christopher Columbus Day to you.
Thank you.
All right. Tell us a little bit about this book.
All right. Well, Fashionably Late, the subtitle is Gay, Bi, and Trans Men Who Came Out Later in Life. And it is a collection of stories, exactly as the subtitle suggests, written by men who came out later on. So mostly from the later Gen X and Baby Boomers generation.
Okay. Now, they actually wrote more than stories. They wrote the story of their lives.
Yeah.
In terms of how they came out.
Yeah.
And what prompted them to do that. Mm-hmm. You've got 16 stories included there. And I must say that three of the stories are writers from the Portland area. Mm-hmm. We've got Wayne Gregory and Reed Vanderberg. And we have you. Mm-hmm. And so the other 13 have contributed from various parts of the country. So what was it that you established for yourself as some sort of criteria in what you wanted from these writers?
Couple of things, or number of things. So when I originally put out the call, I was hoping to get just a variety of topics approaching just the general impact. So not just all stories that, and many of them do have the kind of journey of how they got to the point of coming out, but also focusing a little on, you know, what is the impact if you're 40 or 50 or 60 or, you know, you've been married for 20 years, what is some of that impact? And so the general criteria was, you know, just basically, obviously willingness to share the story, to write the story, kind of lost my train of thought there, but yeah, the criteria was primarily just late blooming men who wanted to share their stories, and I had some, you know, some guidelines about word length and whatnot, and obviously looking for people who could actually write their stories.
Right. I noticed one thing in one of the things I noticed was that several of the contributors had some rather lengthy stories, and others were a real quick 3 or 4 page read, you know. So when you sent out the call for submissions, how did that work for you? I mean, did you send out en masse to 10,000 people, or that's just an exaggeration, but
Right. I actually just primarily submitted to, you know, I worked in publishing for over a decade now, submitted to sources that I know writers frequent to look for submission calls. There's lots of organizations out there, writers organizations, and then also looked specifically for LGBTQ writing organizations. And then at a certain point, when you start putting submission calls out there, they take on a life of their own. You know, some writer picks it up and sends it to a friend who thinks, oh, this looks like something that would be good for you, for your story. So at one point, it just kind of goes out of your hands, and you right. don't even know where people find out about it sometimes.
So ultimately, how many submissions did you get?
I don't actually remember off the top of my head. I mean, it was a couple of years ago now. I mean, more than's in the book. I didn't publish everything, obviously.
Right.
And there were a few that you know, or part of the challenge of writing and working with nonfiction is, of course, that, you know, you're working with somebody's story. And there were some that I thought, you know, obviously anybody who has the courage to come out, you have a great story, but maybe this was a story that you need to tell. It's not necessarily something that works in a written format. So, I don't even think I can remember the actual count.
Right.
But it was, you know, more than's in the book.
Did you have a lot of editing to have to do?
I had a minimum standard for what I was looking for. Like I said, you know, since this is a book, I wanted people who could write to a certain level and communicate. Many of the stories, I don't know if you had a chance to read the bios, came from some pretty polished writers. So not really. I mean, not a heavy amount of editing involved, which is, you know, when you're working on an anthology, you kind of don't want to have to really, really overhaul somebody's story. You just kind of want to do the basic editing and move on from there.
Right. No, I understand what you mean. Now, one of the things that I found really interesting in reading through these men's stories was how similar some of their experiences were with my own life. And I thought, wow, that's really weird, you know? And then I had to stop and realize that, you know, we're all human.
Yes.
So we're going to be subject to many fallacies that may seem like a whole bunch of other people have those same fallacies. So it's hard to tell. But in Wayne Gregory's portion, and if that name sounds familiar to you, it's because Wayne is a local Portland guy. He sings with the Portland Gay Men's Chorus and is involved around Portland. And he wrote about something that had to do with his separation from his wife. Why don't you pull that up and read it, if you would, and kind of share with our listeners a little bit about what was going on in his life.
So Wayne's stories actually was a little different, knowing Wayne personally. And I asked him, he asked, you know, what would you want in the anthology? And I knew I had read his memoir. He has a memoir out about his life story. And so I knew his story. And one of the things I find unique about his story is that he and his ex-wife have remained friends. And so I kind of asked him if he would write his story more about that relationship and how it came out. But he does have a passage in his story that you asked, that you talked about, that kind of shows that point where the relationship broke down first. Right. So I'm just going to read.
There was going to be an iceberg.
Yeah. And so it starts with, Terry and I had been married for 25 years, although the last couple have been years of separation and unraveling. Unhappiness and depression had crept into our relationship and into our individual lives. But we held on to our Christian dogma against divorce, genuinely hoping that there would be some chance of fixing things or at least some way to live with the pain and disappointment. And side note, Wayne was a minister for several years.
Right.
The only plan we ever had to end our marriage was death do us part. But our best efforts at keeping it together came to a screeching halt with a simple question late one summer afternoon. So I sit on the patio under the shade of the Asian pear trees. The August sun splashes its orange light across the yard. I am expecting Terry back at any moment from her weekend trip in California. She comes out from the basement door and walks back to the patio. Her steps are slower than usual, almost hesitant. She sits in the chair across from mine and looks away. "How was the trip?" I say. She grips the wide arms of the chair and turns slowly toward me. Her voice is deliberate yet gentle. "Are you gay?" Her face is almost hopeful, as if the answer to years of frustration is finally at hand.
Yeah, I found that a rather poignant moment in the storytelling, and only because some of those circumstances I can relate to extremely personally, and I understand that when you're about to go through an experience like this, you know, and you're being confronted with what the truth really is, sometimes it's not the easiest thing to sail through.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you in your story, and I won't go into great detail about it, but in your story, you use the reference of the reflection in the mirror.
Yes.
How did you come up with that?
Well, my story centers around a real event, and it was the it's about a year after I came out, dealing with what I actually refer to as the year of heavy lifting. It's sort of, you know, I've been this person most of my life that I want everyone to see me as, and then finally accepting who I was, and going back and forth between figuring out what part of my persona was really me, what part of it was something I put on for other people to hide behind, and sorting it out. But through it all, I was challenged at one point by a friend to really look at myself for who I really was and accept myself. And it was this, it was sort of a, at the time I kind of rolled my eyes, said, you know, send me this video of a challenge of looking yourself in the mirror and telling yourself you love yourself. And I kind of rolled my eyes. This, you know, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, you know, what kind of woo-woo nonsense is this? And I tried to do it and couldn't. It was really, really hard. And that's kind of where my story starts, and realizing that I, looking at myself in the mirror, and even after I'd come out, still had a hard time looking at that person that I had kind of hated, kind of didn't want to be my whole life. And finally being able to look that person in the eye for who he was and accept him, and stop seeing him as something other than me, and kind of that reaching that point where the person in the mirror and I are one, and you know, have a good relationship with each other.
No, I understand, and that's really important, because I think in the putting together of these stories, you run into something that's really interesting. You have 16 contributors, and each of them have lived their own lives. And yet within them, there is this, their own reflection of something that they're going through that, you know, has prompted them to make the decision that they were going to announce to the world that they were gay. And it was harder for some and easier for others. But yet at the same time, I think it's sort of a fabric that ran through the whole book. And there's a there has to be a couple of instances that you can share with us where that reflection thing came through you know, maybe several of the other authors.
Yeah, I actually think you're right. It's just a quick side note, when the late bloomers group that I run for men who came out later in life, one of my favorite things to do is to ask people, what was the thing, you know, what kind of was the thing that made you reach that point? And everybody has a different answer. As far as in the anthology, you know, most of the authors, at least at some point, kind of explain what was that catalyst for them? What was that moment of realizing that they had to come out? So two examples that come to mind, David Livingston's story, Lying Through Living. He's one of the bisexual authors. And for him, he had a daughter, and it was looking at his 5-year-old daughter one day and realizing, I think his exact words, this is the one person in my life I absolutely positively can never lie to. And realizing that he had spent his life living a lie and hiding, and he, as a father, couldn't model that. He wanted to model authenticity for his daughter. And so for him, the reflection was, you know, looking at his daughter and going, you know, I've done this to myself. I can't do this to her. And I can't ask her, you know, to live that same life I did. So that was a you know, a parental moment. And then another one that comes to mind is, in the story, I'm going to get the title wrong. Where does it go? Clayton's story, A Phone Call from a Closet. His moment that I find interesting. So he had been in a relationship for 10 years, but had not told his parents, and had not told most of his family. And the breaking point for him was he had a fight with his boyfriend, and really wanted to just talk it out with his parents, like his straight siblings did when they had disagreements with theirs. And so he finally, the moment for him was realizing that I'll never be able to call my parents up and say, can you give me some parental wisdom on what to do in this relationship if I can't come out to them? And so for him, it was more, you know, that turning point was the realization that his keeping that secret, keeping closeted, had limited his interaction with his parents and had cut off a supply of support and wisdom that he needed and wanted in his life.
Okay, now, before we forget about this, because we could just yak all day long, You've got a special event coming up tomorrow.
Yes.
Tell us about the event.
So tomorrow night, which is National Coming Out Day, by the way, October 11th, we are at the Adriana Hill Grand Ballroom in downtown. We are having a book launch party for the book, and I mean party. So we are going to have all sorts of fun there. It's in the ballroom. It's a beautiful location. I've invited Bridging Voices, which is the local Gay Straight Alliance youth choir. They're going to perform for the event, and then a handful of the readers are going to be there tomorrow to read from the book. So it's a big event. It's a big fun party.
Absolutely. Okay, now tell me, how'd you get in this line of work? I mean, this publishing and writing and all the rest of that stuff. Mm-hmm.
A long, complicated, journey. It was my undergrad days. I studied writing, studied English, and it was actually through my advisor. I'd taken all these fiction writing classes and nonfiction writing classes, and I was talking with her about my experiences working with a student newspaper, and she looked at me and said, "Well, you're one of the rare people I've met in a writing program who actually has the skill set for publishing. You might want to think about that." I hadn't really put a finger to that. I just know that I liked editing and I liked helping people shape their stories, and I liked the creation process almost as the process in and of itself. Right. And so after that, it was just a matter of exploring that. I did go to the publishing program at Portland State for my graduate work, and it kind of snowballed from there. So I live in the world of book creation.
Well, you get the full enchilada. How encouraging can you be to young people today that are thinking about the craft of writing and wanting to put their toes in the water? What would you say to them if one of them were sitting across from us right now?
That's a good question. I think you have to have a certain level of optimism and a certain level of defiance to make it as a writer. But the thing I know about writers in particular is that it is an art, and if you're a writer, you just can't not be a writer. And a lot of the people I work with, it's just a passion, and eventually they're able to turn that passion into something. But every writer I know, they can't not be a writer.
So how do you, being in that position, keep from, not putting enough time into one aspect of it or too much time in another aspect of it?
No, that's the balancing act I have. One of my frustrations is I spend most of my day working with other people's writings. And then if I'm not guarded with my time and energy, I don't have time for my own. One tool that has helped me this year in particular, I'm part of a group called Sit Down, Shut Up and Write. And we get together once a week, and that's exactly what we do. It's a bunch of writers who want to find time to write. And so it's a bit of an accountability group. We just get together. We have a little half an hour of, socialization, and then the bell dings. Nobody's allowed to talk for an hour, and we just sit there and write for an hour, and then the bell dings again, and we go about our day. And it's at least, it's that I know that at least once a week I'm getting guaranteed writing time in through that. I find that helps. And yeah, that is a challenge for people who work in publishing who also write, because I know some who structure their day. They get up, they write to a certain point, and then bell rings, they take a break, and then they start working on other people's projects. So it really just depends on, but it is discipline.
Right. Now, tell me about this other venture of yours, the Late Bloomers Club.
Yeah, so the Late Bloomers is really what inspired the book. I started it about a year or so after I came out. 34... It's kind of funny to look back on now. I thought I was, so old coming out. I've been told many times that I wasn't that old. But I started it because
they didn't card you in a bar, did they?
They didn't. No, I'm beyond that. I'm beyond that now. I'm trying to enter into a new world, trying to make my way among, the gay scene and, the community and figuring things out. And, 34 years old, your peers, I go out and they those who have been out since they were 20 or since they were 15, they just, it's their culture. They say things and I'm sitting there going, I don't know what they're talking about. And I don't want to admit that I don't know what they're talking about. These are terms that I don't know. And so I, you know, from time to time I would meet another guy like me, and it was a nice camaraderie to be able to kind of talk about that and have that. And so I started the group, mostly just thinking I would find a handful of guys like me who came out and just to kind of have that once a month, maybe go have coffee and we can just not worry about that and just, you know, no judgment. And we don't have to constantly be talking about what we're learning and all that stuff. And right. So I started it and then it put it up on Meetup and thought I would get 8 guys. As of, I think yesterday, the Meetup group itself has 230 members just from the Portland area.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. And if somebody listening wants to know more about that, how could they get hold of you?
The easiest way to find about the group is meetup.com. Just put in PDX Late Bloomers Club. But also if you just Google PDX Late Bloomers Club, we do have a freestanding website with info and contact information.
Okay. Now, you've gotten up close and personal with 15 other lives. Mm-hmm. And
16, actually.
Well, yeah, okay. We can make it 16.
Well, no, I'm 16. Yeah. I'm the 17th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have to have learned something about that experience. Mm-hmm. Something that you could probably share with either on a group setting or something that's affected you in a way that makes all of that hard work worthwhile. What would that be?
That's a good, as far as, well, I definitely I jokingly say I can kind of chart the coming out course, kind of like the points that everybody will hit along the line. It's a little bit of a joke, but I think that my biggest takeaway through all of this experience is of both writing the book and both are putting the book together and having the Late Bloomers group is that there is power in realizing you're not alone. Like I said, when I started the Late Bloomers group, I didn't realize I was going to get that many people who related. And I had to step back and reflect and go, what was that? What drew people to it? What makes people come? And it was really just my own act of raising up my hand and saying, hey, you know, I'm like this. I feel kind of alone being like this. I'd like to meet anybody else who does it. And you throw your hand up and people like you flock. Almost every month we have our regular discussion group. Someone comes in and one of my greatest joys is watching somebody go in feeling like I'm alone. Nobody understands me. Maybe some sense of shame and guilt. And they come in and they see a room full of people that have similar yet different experiences. And they go from realizing I'm not alone and I'm not as abnormal as I think I am to realizing that there's hope and they can make it and that they don't have to have that feeling. For me, I think the biggest takeaway is just that, through all of this, as far as personally is the importance of visibility. We talk about that with youth. We have things like, the It Gets Better campaign. That's mm-hmm. a visibility at youth. I didn't realize until I started doing what I'm doing that everybody needs that, older, younger. Everybody needs to feel visible and everybody needs to feel that they're not alone. Right. And that there's hope for whatever it is that they feel is robbing them of hope.
Are there any thoughts at this point in volume 2?
Yeah, I would love to do a collection of women's stories. I decided not to do that on this onset because to do that, I would want to have an actual co-editor for that who is a woman who understands that. I just felt it was a little too disingenuous for me to try and assess the women's stories. Mm-hmm. And I would love to hopefully jump into that real soon.
From the standpoint, if I were a sociologist, these would be just a goldfield of information, of learning about people. and the interactions of people and what brought them to make decisions that are going to alter the rest of their life. So, you know, I think there's a lot of great material there. My guest has been Vinnie Kinsella. He is the author or editor of Fashionably Late, and he's going to be having a coming out party tomorrow night. Why don't you just mention the time and date?
Yeah. So tomorrow night, October 11th, National Coming Out Day, 7 p.m. at the Adriana Grand Hill Ballroom downtown. 7 p.m.
Okay. Well, that's Radio Zine. I'm Dan Johnson. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a great remainder of this Christopher Columbus holiday.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:59 a.m. Up next is the news at noon. Thank you for listening and supporting KBOO Portland.
Now the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, October 10th, 2016. Today is Columbus Day, an official federal holiday named after the European explorer and slave trader Christopher Columbus, who sailed the Atlantic and reached the Western Hemisphere in 1492. Known as the Discoverer of America, Columbus actually never set foot in North America. On all four of his trips across the Atlantic, Columbus landed on the islands of Cuba, the Bahamas, and Hispaniola, today known as Haiti and the Dominican Republic. While not the first European to land in the Western Hemisphere, Columbus does mark the beginning of the first permanent European settlements in the region. Columbus was also the first slave trader